in the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for a moral revival, one of the things we've been clear on is that we have to shift the narrative. The narrative, because if you don't shift the narrative, but you can't do that without shifting the narrators, right? And this country has this history. And for instance, right after the Civil War, you had this coming together of blacks and poor whites, even during the Civil War, some who found out they had been really lied to by the white slave-owning aristocracy, and that they were all left poor, black and white. So they came together, and they created a movement called the Reconstruction Movement. And that movement was designed to rewrite constitutions, make slavery illegal. They fought for the 14th Amendment, equal protection under law, the 15th Amendment, right to vote. They fought for public education to be open to everybody, to change criminal justice laws, to get fair wages, and even they talked about healthcare, because the Freedmen Bureau healthcare system was in place in 1866-67. Then a movement arose that twisted the language. They called themselves the Redemption Movement. And the language sounds very nice, redemption, redeem, but it meant to redeem America from the influence of black and white fusion coalition that fundamentally was shifting the country. The point I want to make is, as Neil Painter at Princeton says, when we see Trump, or when we see what's happening now, we're seeing what she calls the iconography of a common American reality. You get the call toward justice, and then you get this response, this reaction back. I think we're in the middle of the birth pains of a third Reconstruction. What we've seen over the last 50 years since 68 is a removal of poverty even from the political discourse. And when it does by the Republicans, they talk about blame, basically, that it's poor people are on some kind of glorified vacation. Democrats then get stuck in middle-class language, middle-class, middle-class, but you have 43.5% of your country poor and in low, poor or low income. And then, for instance, last year, 2 years ago, we go through a presidential election. 26, by my count, maybe more, maybe a little less, 26 presidential debates, primary, and not 1 hour on poverty. Something and low wealth. That's impacting 43.5% of your country. Whatever people call themselves, progressives or whatever name, we would be foolish to then stay in silos. That doesn't mean the silo isn't important, but at some point you have to understand, I believe, as King said, there were three. We said there are five interlocking injustices, which require what we call a nonviolent, because if you do violence, the structures will use that against you. Moral, because it's not about Democrat or Republican, it's about our deepest religious values and our deepest constitutional values. Fusion. Fusion is the sense that it's not even coalition. A fusion coalition is where the issues are so connected, you can't really separate them. It's kind of like when the sun burns bright because of fusion. All these atoms come together, right? And so we believe that systemic racism, as it relates to the penetration points we're using, are voter suppression, Islamophobia, xenophobia, the continuing denial of justice for immigrants, particularly Latinos, and the continuing mistreatment of indigenous people. Those are the five penetration points. Are connected to systemic poverty for everybody, are connected to ecological devastation, are connected to the war economy and militarism, and are connected to a distorted moral narrative that really says racism, poverty, ecological devastation, and war are not really moral issues. We're saying those are five interlocking injustices which require a fusion intersectional response of all people. You can't have black people, brown people over here talking about voter suppression, and then somehow white people talking about poverty and economics, and then the environmentalists over here talking about this, and the peace people talk. It's connected. Here's some of the stories that sometimes make me quote what Fannie Lou Hamer said when she was before the convention. She said, if this is America, I question America. So down in Lowes County, Alabama, which is barely 15 miles from the Edmund Pettus Bridge, and where Congress people come all every year to talk about how great the people were in the past, we saw a grandfather and a mother, two different locations, where their homes, in the back of their yards, is literally raw sewage, where children and grandchildren have to play. And we saw where the political operatives worked to get sewage up to where the businesses were, but would not bring it to those homes. And we also found out that there were white families in the same condition, but many of them are afraid to unite with the black family. We've seen on the Apache Nation in Arizona, I went there and saw how their burial grounds are being destroyed by multinational companies. Though they know that 98% of what comes up is unusable and will turn into airborne toxins that cause cancer. We have been to Detroit, and we've seen the people who've kept the fight alive, the welfare rights workers, but also looking at communities that look like they've been bombed. I went to Flint and looked into that black water and saw it, and to think about and to talk to people who've been poisoned, you know, by that water. We've seen up at Gray's Harbor in Seattle, in Washington, a whole community of millennial, white millennials, you know, adults, but millennials, living homeless in the middle of a city. I've been to West Virginia and Eastern Kentucky, places that they say, you know, an African American couldn't go because it is, you know, 89% of the people voted for Trump and they're mostly white. But we went there by invitation and met with coal miners who told us that what really happened was when the politicians allowed a company to buy a former steel company that had a union, but then they didn't grandfather the unions in. Or we met Amy, who came out of the hills of West Virginia, and she came to testify and tell about being a woman with a degree, but having to work a poverty level job, and how she was upset because when the teachers won their pay increase, the governor played the teachers against poor people by saying, we're gonna give the teachers a raise, but we're gonna cut Medicaid and stop SNAP programs. And so, these are just some of the stories. We went to Dallas and found out that Dallas, with all of its tall buildings, has the largest population of poor children in the country. Alaska, I went to Alaska and met with the tribes there and the natives who are going to suffer because of what's happening with ANWR and the opening up of the wildlife refuge and the way in which the Alaskan people, the natives particularly, are treated, and the level of poverty that they face, and the way in which their culture is destroyed. So, you know, what happens in doing this is it's like a weight. You know, I was in the room in Seattle when one young lady stood up and said, I'm a redneck, and I'm the white trash that America threw out but forgot to burn. And I'm joining the movement. And I've been to Alabama and met with a mother whose daughter is named Venus, who died in her arms because Alabama refused to expand Medicaid. Whenever we have a mass meeting, the first part of it is testimony, because we want to say these are not just empirical stats, that if we're going to change the direction, if we're going to bring this third reconstruction to full birth, if we have to put a face. This movement is not about Trump. Because if Trump hadn't have gotten elected and Hillary had, there would still be 37 million people without health care. There would still be 5,600 people dying every year for every 1 million people without health care. There would still be 140 million people. We would still be talking too much about the military and the middle class and not the poor. So we're reclaiming. We're saying welfare is a good word. It's a constitutional word. And if your policies only promote greed and funding the corporations and creating a society where three people can own more than the bottom 60% of the poor, that's not constitutional and it's immoral. Therefore, it's not about just a political argument in the limited sense. It's about really the larger political argument. What kind of democracy are we going to be or not be? That's really what's on the line. You can't change the agenda till you change the narrative. So this is not new. It's as old as the people marching through the Red Sea, you know. But we have to, in our moment, recognize this is not a time to just sit down and wait on the next election. Because even if you have a change in who gets elected, if these issues are not brought to the fore, the tendency of the people to get elected is to stay with what they've been doing.